This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
This is Radio EcoShock. We're kicking off a serious look into the biggest problem humanity has ever faced. Will we lose the climate we depend on? If so, how much time remains to save ourselves? The big developments may not be happening in cities with news media where you live, but in the hostile far reaches of the Arctic tundra and the polar sea. In 2007, the summer sea ice melted back so far. Scientists were shocked, their jaws dropped, and they worried as never before. Next, we talk with the lifelong expert on sea ice, Dr. Peter Wadhams of Cambridge. Our guest is one of the leading scientists in the Arctic and especially in Arctic ice research. In the UK, Peter Wadhams is professor of ocean physics and head of the Polar Ocean Physics Group at the University of Cambridge. He is president of the International Association for the Physical Sciences of the Ocean Commission on Sea Ice, and he's a member of too many Arctic study projects to mention here, and also an award-winning person and scientist. Professor Wadhams, thank you for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
Pleasure.
Peter, a recent article in the Independent newspaper names changes in the Arctic sea ice as a possible cause of the great freeze-up in Europe this winter. How would that work?
Well, there's a very large shortage of ice in the Barents Sea at the moment. Normally, the ice edge in winter in the Barents Sea is advancing westwards, but at the moment, there's an extremely large area of open water. And this obviously leads to a great amount of heat loss from the ocean to the atmosphere. And this is thought to be one, it could be a factor which is influencing the pattern of atmospheric pressure, which is sending Arctic air down into Europe. I mean, it's not a clear connection, but the fact that there's such an extreme amount of open water and Europe is getting such an unusually large amount of Arctic air could be linked.
Yes, no, it is strange because, on the other hand, I've seen maps showing higher than normal temperatures in the polar region this winter, and we've had an almost non-existent winter in North America. Could changes in the Arctic lead to still more weather instability, do you think?
Well, that is one of the predictions of climate models. I mean, you can't, a particular weather event, you should be cautious about ascribing it to climate change. What you have to look at are long-term averages and changes in those. But along with the changes in long-term averages, like changes in the average sea ice extent, changes in average air temperatures, there are predicted to be a greater number of extremes, that extreme temperatures, extreme storm events like occurrence of hurricanes, these are predicted to be more frequent as the climate changes and warms up.
And what is your specialty, really? What do you do that you really enjoy and that you think is important?
Well, I've been working really all my life, I suppose, on sea ice in the Arctic. In fact, I started out working in Canada on these problems. And the various aspects that we're studying include looking at the motion of the sea ice, the growth of the sea ice. And we're also measuring its thickness, and we've been doing so for a very long time, from submarines, and so we build up a picture of how the distribution of thickness in the Arctic changes with time over a period of more than 30 years, and this is what's giving us really the rather frightening information that the thickness is now only about half what it was 30 years ago.
And one of the big debates is, when will the Arctic be more or less ice-free in the summer? What is new information telling us about this?
Well, it looks as if this is going to be very close. The extent of ice in the summer, it's easy to measure what the area of ice is in the Arctic because you have all kinds of satellites that show you that. The difficulty is measuring how thick it is, and that's where we've been able to get data from submarines. And if you add in the submarine data to the extent data so that you're turning area into volume, you multiply the area by the thickness, then the decline in volume has been much more dramatic than the decline in area. In other words, the Arctic sea ice has been retreating, but it's kind of holding out a bit, but it's been thinning as well. And at a certain point, the thinning and the retreat will interact with one another and the whole thing will collapse. And the predictions are really based on the trends up to now that the summer sea ice will collapse within the next 2 or 3 years, and we might see an ice-free Arctic Ocean in summer, in September, within about 3 years of now.
And what would that mean for the world?
Well, it would, for practical things, it would make it a lot easier to navigate across the Arctic Ocean. Shipping would be able to cross the Arctic and also go through the northwest and northeast passages more easily. Offshore exploration and oil production would have a longer season. So there's practical things that might be thought to be beneficial, but the problems as far as the climate are concerned is that it will greatly accelerate the rate of global warming, because the shrinkage of the sea ice is extending the area of open water, which absorbs most of the solar radiation that falls on it, has a low albedo, and that gives you a positive feedback to global warming. So we might expect global warming to proceed much more rapidly, and we already know that it's proceeding faster in high latitudes than in low latitudes. So Canada, for instance, Canada and Russia are getting about twice as much warming as the low latitudes of the world. So the unstable nature of that, which is causing a lot of climatic instabilities, melt of permafrost and so on, that's going to cause really increased problems, and those problems are going to be especially severe for high latitude regions.
And are we heading towards the famous tipping point where climate changes could develop that are beyond human control?
There's lots of possible tipping points for different climatic parameters, but I do suspect we're at one or past one for sea ice, because I don't think sea ice can now go back to the way it was 20 or 30 years ago. Then you had a lot of the ice in the Arctic was many years old. It was called multi-year ice. It was very heavy ice. It circulated within the Arctic Ocean. It got thicker and thicker every year. It was really tough stuff to get through with an icebreaker. But the multi-year ice is disappearing out of the Arctic because the wind patterns are changing as well and driving the ice out. It's not growing as thick in the winter, and more of it's melting in the summer. And so the Arctic is becoming a first-year ice zone, and before long it will become, like the Antarctic, a seasonal ice zone. So you'll have ice in the winter all over the Arctic Ocean, but fairly thin first-year ice, and then in the summer that'll all go away like it does in the Antarctic, and you'll have open water with lots of consequences there, including melt of permafrost, lots of additional damage to coastal settlements, because there'll be much more, the open water will allow bigger waves to be generated in storms, so you have coastal erosion, but lots of problems that you associate with the open sea that you thought you would never have to contend with in the Arctic will now be coming along.
Professor Peter Wadhams, what are your thoughts about the discovery of more methane emissions coming from eastern Siberian coastal waters?
That's a new danger and one that could be extremely nasty. We don't know yet, but it's looking that way. What's happening is that because the sea ice is retreating much more in the summer than it used to do, it's exposing now all the continental shelves of the Arctic, especially in the Siberian Sea, East Siberian Sea and the Laptev Sea, the shelves around the Russian Arctic, but also the areas, the narrower shelves around Alaska and Canada. And it's exposing those to open water during the summer. And because the shelves are shallow waters, the water warms up to about 5 degrees in places now, which it never used to do. It would sit at zero even in the summer, because it wasn't exposed to the atmosphere for very long. But what's happening now is it's warming up to about 5 degrees, and that warming extends right down to the seabed. And the seabed contains a lot of offshore permafrost, where the permafrost in the Arctic extends out to sea. And that permafrost is now melting and retreating, because it's being now warmed up by the warmer water. And that's releasing a lot of methane that was trapped under the permafrost. This has only been observed in the last 2 or 3 years by joint Russian-Alaskan expeditions that have been going out into the East Siberian Sea and seeing huge plumes of methane bubbling out. And the methane detection systems that we now have are showing a blip of methane in the atmosphere that's increasing. Methane levels in the atmosphere had flattened off in the last decade or two, not for any known reason, but they had flattened off. But now they've started to rise again. And since methane is a very, very active greenhouse gas, the concern is that this rise in methane might be due to this new release from the Arctic. And if that continues and all the subsea methane gets released in one go, that would give you a huge boost to global warming rates for a number of years. That methane exerts an influence on the atmosphere for about 7 years after release, whereas carbon dioxide is more like 100. So it's a big kick. It doesn't last so long, but while it's there, it's giving a real kick to global warming.
Well, given these worries about rapid changes in the Arctic, do you see a need for a plan B, like some kind of geoengineering, just in case we need to chill the Earth quickly?
I think we do need to think about that. I'm reluctant because I think obviously the state of the planet reflects the fact that we've been doing too many technological things to it, and a lot of the plight we find ourselves in is because we've been developing industry, burning fossil fuels, releasing carbon dioxide. All the things we do seem to make to have a bad effect on the planet. So to propose a technological solution to the problems that we ourselves have created by technology is a little bit of a dangerous thing, because there might be unknown side effects to anything we try that could be worse than the original effect we're trying to counter. But the situation is so bad and so little is being done. I mean, the obvious way to counter global warming is to release less carbon dioxide and reduce our fossil fuel usage. But nobody in practice is prepared to do that. We won't do it until we're forced to by all the oil running out. So if we're not going to take the steps that we need to take to save ourselves by reducing our carbon dioxide production, then one has to consider maybe a techno fix might be the thing to try. So these ideas about geoengineering to try to reduce the radiative forcing that's warming us by things like changing the colors of clouds by brightening them up, they sound a bit science fiction-like, but it could be that those are the things we'll have to try in order to stop global warming from getting out of hand.
Well, as we wrap up, have I missed something important? Is there something else you would like to tell our listeners?
Well, I think the methane problem is one that we really should concern ourselves with. One of the problems about policymakers is that insofar as they do base themselves on the scientific consensus, it's usually the consensus of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change reports. They only come out about once every 4 or 5 years. The last one was in 2007. There's another one being prepared at the moment. But they're based on published scientific data as of the time that the report came out. So we're basing all our thinking and plans on the 2007 IPCC report, which itself is based on measurements done up to about 2006. This methane catastrophe that's coming seems to be happening has only happened in the last 2 or 3 years. So the data has come in since the last IPCC report. So it maybe isn't being given the attention that it deserves. And I think we should be doing a lot more to measure what's going on the Arctic shelves and to really keep track of this methane increase. And if necessary, we might have to, that might be the prompt that we need to take action by some kind of geoengineering approach, because you're adding the methane kick to the carbon dioxide kick and maybe accelerating global warming that way.
Our guest has been Professor Peter Wadhams, the Arctic expert from Cambridge University in the UK. Thank you so much.
Okay, pleasure.
Radio EcoShock.
Notice that Dr. Peter Wadham supports the calls for immediate action to save the remains of Arctic ice. He supports the call to action raised by the Arctic Methane Emergency Group. I spoke with that group's founder, John Nissen, a Cambridge-educated scientist who chose a career in computer software instead. Now retired, Nissen tried to alert authorities like America's John Holdren to new warnings coming from Arctic specialists like the Russian team of Natalia Shakova and Igor Semilyatov. They found large plumes of methane gas, the same powerful greenhouse gas which some scientists believe caused past mass extinction events. Nissen and his emergency group members are concerned a sudden burst of methane up to 50 gigatons could trigger a runaway greenhouse event, something humans couldn't stop and perhaps could not survive. I won't have time in this program to do justice to his argument. I have links in my blog to articles written by filmmaker Gary Hauser, who is documenting the new science, and prolific writer Sam Arcana. If you can stand a good scare, which may well be all too true, please follow this up in my blog at ecoshock.info. We'll also have more on the Arctic methane threat in coming Radio EcoShock programs. Thank you for listening.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.